Mac, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, everybody, this is Connie Francis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Jolo Cicero, formerly from the Riffs and also Lenny Coco and the Chimes, and currently singing with the Doo-Wop Mob. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Pretty baby, won't you dance with me? Can't you see what you mean to me? Darling, you're my inspiration, you're my destination. Listen to my plea. I love you, I need you, I want you. Say that you'll be mine. Pretty baby, can't you understand that I'm your lover man? So come dance with me. I love you, I need you, I want you. Say that you'll be mine. Pretty baby, can you understand that I'm your lover man? So come dance with me. Oh, pretty baby, pretty, 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 pretty baby, come and dance with me.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest a guy who's probably spent his whole adult life, and maybe even before that, singing this music that we know and love. You can call it R&B, you can call it doo-wop, but he's been a guy that's been in our genre for so many years. And he's the kind of guy who can just stand there and chime off instead of having to learn the tune for 6 weeks. And those are the guys that really cut their teeth on the street corner. We just looked at each other and we went, here's the tune we're doing. You're singing second tenor and you sang it. That person I consider to be a very good friend of mine. He's a Florida guy now. Mr. Joe LoCicero. How you doing, Joe?
All right. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. I think you know what I'm talking about when you have the music in your blood and like we used to go to Jones Beach and sit on the towel and just chime off. They would call
out
the tunes and you'd chime off, you know.
That's right.
And that was it. And that's really what it's all about when it's in your blood, you know.
You better believe it. You better believe it. Yeah. If you're not on a corner singing doo-wop or whatever the case may be, you're at a beach with a whole bunch of people around you, enjoying it with a guy with a guitar, and you're hitting it off either a cappella or with the guitar. It was a great time.
Now, we used to go around in the car, and, you know, we would go to different towns. I can remember going to Long Beach and singing at Nathan's, and, you know, we'd get out there in the parking lot. We'd start singing, and, you know, we'd get chased. The guy would come out, hey, McGuire Sisters, get out of here. I'm not selling hot dogs. Go away.
That usually happens.
So let me ask you this. You were born and raised where?
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. Which part of Brooklyn?
I was born in East New York.
Right.
That's like Rockaway Avenue, Fulton Street.
Wow.
You know, around that area, Pacific Street.
Right.
Yeah. Near Bronzeville. Eastern Parkway,
All
that whole section with the 8th Avenue.
Right.
We used to go down the subway and sing Harmony Down There, of course, you know.
But, of course, what was the nearest subway stop to you?
It was Rockaway Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Then we had two or three of them. We had We had Ralph Avenue, Rockaway Avenue, and East New York.
Wow. Because, you know, I did a lot of singing in Brooklyn. I did screamers for the Joe Pastor Orchestras for years. And I don't know if you knew them or remember them. They had a pretty big wedding outfit. And we used to do the Glen Terrace and the Oriental Manor and Carmine's Copa and, you know, all of those places. And screamers were great. I got paid a lot of money because, let's say, Tony Michaels would do a showcase and he would book three gigs for that date. And I would go to one of them. And when the groom turned the bride around towards the band and you were introducing them, she would start screaming because she would say, that's not the guy that I hired. So I had to collect the money from Nunzio, you know, the remainder, and also sing good. So, you know, that's why they were called screamers, and they paid you like double. And I did that for years, you know, with a couple of good guys and, you know, whatever. Of course, so many great singers came from Brooklyn. I mean, you had guys on every corner. You had a great group.
Oh, no, there was so many groups in my neighborhood. It was like crazy. I mean, especially near the schoolyard, 178 schoolyard on Pacific Street and Saratoga Avenue. They used to sing in the schoolyards. You know, all famous groups like the Jive Five and, you know, Eugene Pitt. I mean, all these guys started in the street, and, you know, and they end up with some nice hit records, you know, at one time or another.
Bobby Feldman told me a story. He said he, of course, wrote What Time Is It for the Jive Five, you know, he said he was going there with his writing partner, and he gets off on the subway, and they walked one block, and some guys walked over to them, wanted to, like, rob them, put them against the wall, and Bobby says, no, you don't understand. We're going to Eugene Pitt's house. We just, you know, from the Jive Five, we just wrote him a song, you know, and they started to like sing it to these guys. And these guys were standing there, you know, and they were saying to him, you know, what's the matter, man? You bugging? But when they started singing the song, he says, oh, we know where Eugene lives. And they escorted them there. He says, nobody's going to bother you. So I thought that was funny.
You know, that's the truth. I'm going to tell you why, because when I was a kid, as long as you know how to sing, you can go into any rough area.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? And I went in plenty of them. You know, there was gangs at the time, like the Corsair Lords, the Don Quell, Fulton Rockaway. It was a lot of gangs at the time. And I went to all these neighborhoods with no problem because I knew how to sing.
Right.
No. And I was singing with a bunch of black guys, you know, and, you know, white guys, Spanish guys. You know, we were really a good time, you know.
Well, it's a universal language, and it's a lot of respect. I mean, look, here I am. I'm a Jewish guy growing up on Long Island. I never hung with the Jewish guys. I always hang with the Italian guys or the black guys, you know, when I went to college, you know, because they used to sing in the bathroom and they used to sing, you know. I was lucky enough to be in a group called the Islanders years ago. We were on Relic Records and, you know, we did a couple of cuts for the Best of Acapella, the guys from Hackensack. But, we had a lot of fun, man. But they were all Irish and Italian. They were not, my father used to say to me, Jewish guys manage groups. They don't sing in them.
I'll tell you, I had a lot of Jewish friends and, they had fun to get down, man. They were good. They were good singers and stuff like that, came from our area, you know, and they were really good. I enjoyed hearing them. I enjoyed singing with them. I mean, and we all mixed together. It was no problem. I mean, really, no problem.
Oh, but of course, because it was the universal thing. Now, did you have music in your family growing up?
Yes, I did. I had my uncles used to sing barbershop.
Wow.
When I was like two to 6 years old, we used to have parties all the time because it was a very big family. And they used to sing and jam, and who played a guitar, who played you know, a sax and stuff like that. And they got down doing, you know, not streets harmony. It was, you know, what do you call it, barbershop harmony.
Right.
And they were great. They were great. Until my uncle, till today, my uncle's 96. He just gave it up when he hit 88.
Wow.
So it's like all my other uncles make them rest in peace. They, yeah. Right.
Why? He used to fall asleep in the middle of the song, right?
Yeah. But I guess that hearing them and growing up with that, my ear, I didn't have to go to school to learn how to sing. Or
wow. Like, see, now that's cool, of course.
Yeah. You know, and from them singing, I just learned, I guess. You know, it just was in my blood.
So how old do you think you were when you all of a sudden looked in the mirror and said, wow, I can really sing a good song. When did that dawn on you?
Well, I'll be honest with you, about 13 years old.
Hmm?
13, the age of 13.
Yeah, no, I understand that because, you know, I started pretty young. I started taking guitar lessons when I was very young, you know, and whatever. And, you know, it was just a great thing. The music always kind of saves your life, no matter what happens to you negative in your life. You know, the music is always there for you, you know?
Oh, definitely. You know, it saves a lot of problems. Like, you know, you stay on the good side of the law. That's number one.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're really into singing, that's all you do. I mean, you love to sing. See, it's got to be in your blood. You know, you're singing every minute. Any song that comes on the radio, you're singing with it. You know, it's in your blood. You can't stop.
Well, I remember the 5 nights a week thing. I remember I was in Manhasset Hills, which was the upscale part of New Hyde Park. And, of course, you know, Don K. Reed came from New Hyde Park, still lives there. Joe Marion grew up in New Hyde Park. He went to Memorial. I went to Herrick's. But there was a lot of years in between us. So we did have a very, very big doo-wop contingent there. As a matter of fact, Joe Neary went to Mineola, and I went to Herrick's, and we were in opposing groups together in 1965 and, you know, 64, we got out of high school. So, you know, we both worked the same Italian restaurant. Joe used to be this big, tall, blonde, blue-eyed, good-looking guy that played the drums standing up. I'll never forget it.
And then
he disappeared. And then, you know, all those years later, I said to him, Joe, you know, whatever happened? He says, I went into the Navy. He said, I got arrested with a friend of mine. And the judge said, you know, either jail or the Navy. And Joe said, I chose the Navy.
Of course.
Yeah. Seeing him again and meeting him again down here was like, you know, I hugged him and kissed him, you know, 100 times because it was like, wow, you know, last time I saw him, we were like 17, you know.
That's right.
It was amazing. Yep. It was amazing.
That was the same thing when I ran into Carmine down here.
Right.
You know, and I didn't see Carmine in 30, 40 years.
Wow.
You know, it was like crazy. And when I came to Florida, I ran into him, and he'd start taking me to these places where he was singing.
Right.
And that's how I started singing again. I had to get guys and stuff like that. And
right.
I did, and that was the end of that. And I kept going since.
Yeah, which is great. So, okay, let's go back to, you know, Joe is singing with his family and, you know, all of a sudden he says, hey, man, I can sing. And other people are telling you that you can sing. Hey, Joe, you got a pretty good voice, you know, whatever. When did you first start taking it seriously? What was your first musical endeavor?
Well, I'll be honest with you. My first time was when me and my cousin Richie Gibelli.
Mm-hmm.
Together, me and him could sing and hit harmony all together, you know, I mean, just me and him. And it was like, we need some guys. You know?
Right.
So that's where we met Carmine and Louie and this guy Vinny.
Uh-huh.
Right? And we started jamming, man, and we hit off. Like, everybody knew what to do. It was like, it was silly. Like, you know, like, we didn't learn nothing. Oh, you remember this song? Yeah, let's do it. We did it.
Wow, that's rare, you know, and that's special because you could take 5, 6 really good singers, and maybe they don't blend. But if they do, wow, then you really got something good.
Well, that's the whole secret of it, is the blending. And who's a little stronger, they got to know how to back off. And
whatever, of course.
And we learned that very young, you know. And when we first cut our record, we were like maybe 14, 15 years old.
Wow.
You know, so it was like, wow, man, we're doing good. We're going to be stars. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But, you know, you pray and hope for everything. And some guys gave it up. Some guys kept going.
Right.
And that's it.
Well, the name of the first group, for people listening, was what?
The first group was the Creations.
Right. And that was Richie and...
That was Richie, Carmine,
right.
Louie, and Vinny.
Right. And, you know, I know what happens. You get together, you sing so much, it's like all of a sudden you know 100 tunes.
That's right. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Right. I did some bass. I did some leads.
Uh-huh.
I did some tenor work. You know, it was like, it was really great. Great time. I mean, you know, really.
Right. And were you getting local shows and things?
In the beginning, what happened was we did a lot of church benefits.
Right.
Of course. That's how you start out.
Those are the best.
They're the best. The dances, all the little dances they used to have in the churches at the time.
Right.
Confraternities and stuff like that. And then I decided to write a couple of songs.
Cool.
Which I did. And, then we recorded them, of course. And that was it. And then we were busy for a while until, things happened with they met girlfriends and stuff like that.
Or the Army called them or something like that. The first thing that you wrote was what? Was that Wake Up in the Morning?
That was Wake Up in the Morning.
Okay.
And the second thing I wrote was Strolling Through the Park.
Right. Well, tell me about Wake Up in the Morning. How did you get the idea for that tune?
We used to sing down the subway.
Right.
Rehearse. And there was this guy down there. He was always drunk.
Uh-huh.
I
remember him.
He had his bottle of wine next to him, and he was drinking.
Right.
And we're singing, and he's going, "You guys are good. You guys are good." You know what I'm saying? "Oh, wow, that's nice." I says, "How could you tell, but you're drunk, He says, "No, you're good, you know?" And I told him one day, I says, "One day I'm going to write a song about you." And that's a true story.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I wrote Wake Up in the Morning.
Wow.
That's the wine song.
Wow.
And that was, I recorded that. And when I went back there to make this guy hear it, I even put it on the tape for this guy.
Uh-huh.
And had my portable player with me.
Wow.
But he lived down the subway. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Wow. And he was gone. I was sad.
Oh,
he
man. Gone.
Yeah. I didn't see him no more after that. You know, I don't know if he passed away or he moved to a different area. You know what I mean? I didn't know.
I don't know. Different, maybe he went with a different group.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
That's
wouldn't that be That's funny, true. Man? If he was singing second tenor from some hip group.
I'm telling you, man.
He said you inspired me.
He probably was an old singer in an old time group.
Let's see if he's on Facebook. I bet.
Yeah.
Everybody else is,
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, That's another whole story.
Got to wake in the morning round about 9, feel so fine, drink my wine, go outside, find my car, hear my drum, I'm a good stop. Come back in round about 10, drink my wine, go out again, feel so fine, drink my wine, it's the only thing that's on my mind.
So, okay, so you recorded that. You recorded that on Pinecrest.
That was Pinecrest Labels, right.
Right. And did it make any noise, that tune?
Wake Up in the Morning did.
Right.
But not in New York for one reason, because they won't allow, the word bum, tramp at that particular time.
Wow.
And in Philly, it made a nice, you know, hit in Philly.
Right.
In Philly, it came in like B+, and A+ was the other side, you know.
Right, right.
So at the time, that's how they rated the records, you know. And I said, oh, wow, but we couldn't get into New York. And New York was like a nightmare for us,
tough.
You know.
New York was tough, I know.
You know. But otherwise, we had the knowledge of you know, singing these songs and what we did. We stood in Brooklyn. We pressed everybody's brain with these songs. You know what I mean?
Right.
to just see if they could take off. But they really didn't take off. You know, just the collectors got them and stuff like that. Like that particular one, "Wake Up in the Morning" on Pinecrest label.
Right.
It's worth about $500-$600.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's just some of them are. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing. I know that to be effective.
I found that out through Steve Horn.
Oh, of course, he knew, right?
Yeah, he's a collector. And
right.
He looked in the book. He said, "Man, that record you got is $510." And this was 15 years ago, whatever it was. You know?
Steve probably said, "It's $500 if you buy it from me. Otherwise, it's like, otherwise it's $29.99.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
right. Strolling Through the Park was the second one, or was that the B side?
That was the B side.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yes, that was the B side, and that started making some you know, moves, and a lot of people was going. Oh, and that came into Brooklyn too. It came into New York.
Right.
But it didn't do nothing. Like, you know, it stood in the high numbers. It just didn't make any moves because at the time we had to see a guy who was our supposedly manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they come and they go.
You know, I'm your manager. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of this or take care of that. Anytime he didn't take care of nothing.
He was taking care of him, right?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. You know, and then maybe we'd go in the studio again. Maybe your parents could come up with more money.
Right.
You know, one of them deals.
Yeah.
I caught on right away. I said, no, this guy's a con job. I said, forget about it, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, we had fun doing it. That was the main thing, you know?
Life was so empty till I met you, glowing in the moonlight, under the stars so blue. It was you,
it was you,
it was I,
it was I,
strolling through the park last night.
Ooh,
we sat thinking of our love, a love that was really ours. It was you,
it was you,
it was I,
it was I,
strolling through the park last night. The love lights from your eyes, the swaying of the trees, the softness of your lips, the cool and summer breeze, and the moon and all its glow brings your beauty so bright. Please tell me that you love me tonight. We sat for a while looking at the stars, thinking of our love, a love that was really ours. It was you,
it was you,
it was I,
it was I,
strolling through the park last night.
There, I mean, there's no greater feeling than that. I mean, you're a kid. You walk out of the studio, and you know you're walking on air. And it's like, you know, you don't want to go to sleep that night. You just want to keep talking about it to keep the moment alive. And you think you're a star, you know, no matter what happens the next day with the record. You know, when you walk out of the studio, it's like, holy shit.
Right. You feel good.
But
you feel like you accomplished something.
But when you're young, you don't realize that it's not, it's you haven't arrived anywhere. It's only the beginning of something. It's not the culmination of anything. You know.
That's right.
So
you're 100% right.
You don't realize that until you look back.
That's
you know?
Right. Unbelievable.
You know, and the difference between groups that had a hit and groups that didn't have a hit and the record fizzled out, it was such a minute difference because those groups that stood on the corner, like yours, like mine, like some of the others, they were as good as some of the groups that had hits, but the planets maybe were not lined up. Or the song, you know, but you know as well as I do, the difference between having a hit and not having a hit was a very minor difference.
That's right. And I knew so many, like I knew Lenny, you know,
sure.
when he had his hit. I mean, 1958, I met Lenny.
Right.
You know what I mean? So many people I knew that had groups that had hits, and I'm standing there going, man, when am I going to get one? You
right.
know, it's like, I'm begging. Then I went in the studio again, and that was the end of, 59 in December, sometime in December. I don't remember the date offhand.
Right.
But we recorded "My Heart Belongs Only to You."
Right.
You know,
which is a great song for you, by the way. I mean, you know, some people, you know, they sing a song, and it's like they sang a song, but that's a great song for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Found a love with the help of a prayer.
That was my mother's idea, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
She says to me, you know, why don't you do a stand-in? Everybody else is getting hits. You're walking around doing your own, writing your own stuff, and
right.
that's happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I did it, you know, and I changed a few words in it and stuff like that. Try to make it doo-wop where,
right.
where people would remember the words.
Right.
You know, because the original My Heart Belongs to You had 1,000 words in it.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So I cut some of the words out,
right.
and I just made it like the doo-wop style like I do, you know. And it, believe it or not, it made some noise.
Cool.
That was the only record with the Creations that made a little noise. And I went, holy shit, and this was in New York. And
right.
I went, wow. I said, we're doing something right, you know. It didn't become a big hit, you know, but
wow.
it made us make a few dollars. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Don played it on the doo-wop shop, of course.
Oh,
and,
definitely.
And
definitely.
You guys went down and did the doo-wop shop, too?
Yes.
Which
yes.
is, I mean, and there's no greater feeling than that. I mean, you know, I've been
yeah,
on...
Yeah, that was the real, when Don started his show, it was one of the first groups to get on there.
Be still my heart.
really, really wonderful guy. And
you bet.
He promoted the song, and
right.
he kept playing it and doing what he has to do. He said he loved the song
right.
and stuff like that. And he loved Wake Up in the Morning, too.
Right.
Loved it. After, you know, so many years have passed, you know. And they started playing that. I went, oh, gee. I says, you know, that's nice, you know. But I guess it was too late at the time, you know, to get a hit, in that period of time.
Because right.
So many groups at that time, like 61.
Yeah, they
62,
were.
Wow, they were
I know.
Coming out of the walls, you know.
I know.
And then, what happened? The Beatles came out.
You bet, you bet.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Mike Miller, my good friend, on the Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed. Remember from the Doo-Wop Shop?
You know, and yet, you know, you got to really marvel at the groups that just kept it up and kept it up and kept it up. You know, I stayed in touch with Don all those years, and you know, I was lucky. He played the heck out of the one. We did a bunch of jingles for him, but the one Harmony Street jingle was the Rebel Lemon Don K. Reed, and he played the poop out of that. And you know, that was nice of him because groups. I mean, you get your jingle played on the Doo-Wop Shop, man. It's like. Even if you didn't have a hit, you arrived.
Yeah.
Even if all your friends that would call you up the next day and say, oh man, I heard you in the Doo-Wop Shop, like thousands and thousands of listeners. That was,
that was a big thing.
Ringing the bell.
We made a few of them. I made them with the riffs and I made them with the chimes too for him. You know, it was nice. It was something, it was nice. It was really good.
You know what's really funny? He only has just a few of them in his possession. CBS owned all of that stuff. And
I know.
He doesn't know where it is. And the other thing I said to him, why don't we get a whole bunch of groups to send in their jingles and I'll put them together and we'll do like an hour's worth of them. And he said, you know what? I thought about it, but I don't want to do it because I don't want to exploit that stuff. That was personal stuff.
That's right.
He says, I don't want to make a dime off it. I don't want to. I says, yeah, but you know what, Don? It should be heard.
Are you kidding, man?
I mean, when you listened on Sunday night, you know, it was like I couldn't wait to get to the jingles to hear what the next group was going to do. It was like those were as popular as some of the records.
That's right.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. And he played everybody. He wasn't, he didn't stick to one particular group.
Yep.
And he played everybody. And he was a good guy. I mean, he is a good guy. That's number one.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I got along with him very well. I mean, even when I came out here and I became the Riffs and everything else out here, the Florida of the Riffs, I went back to New York with their CD that we made here.
Right.
You know, and he played everything. You know, he was a great guy. I mean, he really is.
Cool. Well, he is... He said that he would never do internet, he would never do Sirius and whatever, but he is now on Belmont Radio at 8 o'clock on Sunday nights, and he's doing the Doo-Wop Shop Sunday nights on Belmont Radio, and I'm on Belmont Radio, Saturday night at 7 o'clock, so I'm in pretty good company, you know?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I just talked to him the other day, you know, he had a quadruple bypass
wished him luck and all that stuff too, yes.
But, he said, hey man, glad to be live. And you know, but he missed it so much that he had to still do it in some capacity. And
I'm glad for that. I really am because he's one of the guys that pushed all the groups that really didn't have big hits, you know, and they were out there singing their butt off.
Oh yeah,
you know, and he did a good job. He did a great job.
You bet he did, man. You know,
yeah, definitely.
You know, now Juanita was that the flip side of My Heart?
Yes, that was the flip side, and I had a couple of different other flip sides. One was called The Bells.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we picked, there was two demos were made.
Uh-huh.
One with The Bells behind it, and one with Juanita from Johnny, you know?
Right.
I happen to like a fair song. I said, let me hit on that, you know?
Yeah, great tune.
You know, and that was it, you know, and I did it, you know. And that was the end of that.
Another
tape.
It's really funny because, I asked Johnny all those years, I says, come on, John. I said, you know, because John was funny. If you asked him certain questions, he'd give you a different answer every time. Like if you asked him how he got the scar on his lip, you know, he'd tell you one story and whatever. You know, I know the story, you know. He was 3 years old and he was running with a glass of water and he tripped on a toy and went into his toy chest. And that's, you know, so that's not so exciting. But I asked him about Juanita. And, you know, somebody said, oh, you know, Juanita was the chihuahua, it was the dog. But I asked JT Carter, And he says to me, I'm going to tell you Juanita. He says, in the neighborhood we live, there was a Puerto Rican girl named Juanita. And we used to rehearse, and we used to stand out there in the street corner. And he said, Johnny had such a crush on her. And he was a kid. He was like 16, and she was like 23, 24 years old. And every time he saw her, he used to go nuts. And JT said, every time she came out of the house and was walking down the street, he said, John would go into his frenzy, and he gave her a little sound bite. And whenever she would walk, JT would go, num, 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 num. And he said, I swear to God, that became the tune. He said, just from the little bass riff I used to do whenever we saw her, and that used to bug Johnny about it, he said, and that grew into a tune. And I said, no kidding. Wow, great story. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But that was it.
Yeah, I did a lot of shows with Johnny through the years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was a great guy, and he was another great guy. I mean, not a peep out of him.
Nope.
He minded his business. He did what he had to do. You know, he came out, sang his song, kicked the shit out of it. And, like, it was great. It was really great, you know. He was a great performer. He was a great singer. He had a voice that was unbearable. I mean, I loved his voice.
A perfectionist at every twist and turn. And, you know, very misunderstood, because a lot of people thought he was standoffish. If he loved you, he would embrace you, and he was funny as hell. Harmony Street did a lot of shows. As a matter of fact, we did Newtown High School, where they had that terrible killing there. And my bass singer, Scott, from Harmony Street, actually lived there, and his kids went there. But way, way before that, we did a show there with the Brooklyn Bridge. And, you know, John gets out on stage and he says, I heard Harmony Street sing Juanita, and I realized that we've been singing it wrong all those years. And that's Johnny's sense of humor. I mean, you know, he was really funny. I met him when the Islanders used to sing at Clay Cole's World in Roosevelt Field, and he had the band, the Crests, when Lois Lee was singing in the group, you know. In those days. And I mean, that was a way back, but man, there will never be a better one.
Nobody. I'm so glad, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame finally, you know, and that's only the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the doo-wop Hall of Fame.
Right.
The major one, he's not in yet.
Well,
and we wrote letters and
I know
all kinds of stuff, and it was terrible. I mean, I thought it was terrible. I mean,
let me tell you about that. See, Terry Stewart, when Terry was the CEO, was a very good friend of mine. When Harmony Street did the White House, we had, right after that, Terry called me up, and, you know, I get this phone call. It's Terry Stewart from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He said, you know, we saw you on Fox News going into the White House. I want you to come to our New Year's party. And that was in 98, 99, and we did.
Right.
And I became very friendly with him. And I did an interview with him, and he said, John is nominated. He is nominated. But, he said, what's happened is that the nominating committees and the voting committees have all changed. They're all rockers now. And believe it or not, the nucleus now is Little Stevie and Bruce Paul Schaefer and those guys. Why do you think Darlene Love got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because she hangs out with that nucleus. I mean, is it fair that Darlene, great talent on every record, but is it fair that she's in and Lala and Dee Dee of the Crystals are not in?
Well, I'll tell you what I found out.
Go ahead.
Me and the Chimes, we opened that place up, you know, when they were building it.
Right.
And we had a big concert over there to raise the money. And we found out if you didn't have a number one record,
right,
you couldn't get in there.
Well,
that's what I was told. How true it was, I don't know.
The criteria were different all the way around. You know, one of the things that Terry said to me was, you know, 16 Candles, big hit. Step by Step, Isn't It Amazing, Angels Listened In, more so East Coast hits than not. Yeah, you know, but still, my feeling is there's a lot that goes into the vote. It is, are you a trendsetter? Did you pave the way for certain things? Were you the
That's
best
right.
at what you did? Were you... Right. Because basically, there are some that are in there. Of course, Shirley's in there with the Shirelles. Great.
Right.
Anthony is in there. You know, Terry Johnson is in there with the Flamingos. But they've moved away from... I'll give you a perfect example. I did an interview, a really great interview with Connie Francis 2 weeks ago. She said to me, would you mind telling me why for 3 decades I was the number one female vocalist in the genre and I'm not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? She said, phooey on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And she's funny as hell. She's so outspoken, you know. But she says, you know, how can you take it seriously if there are certain people that are not in there? Already it becomes political and loses credence.
Yeah, we had guys that all got together many years ago, all the singers got together and they put a petition up.
Right.
And for not only Johnny, for all the big groups that had so many hits.
Right.
All right, they weren't number one, they were number two. You know, give me a break.
I understand.
Number two was a big hit, you know.
I understand.
And then you got the Drifters that had one hit.
Right.
And, you know, but they had so many twos and fours and tens. And they played them years ago. If you hit number one, your record died.
Right.
You know, once you hit it. But if you stood in two and up, they kept pushing and playing and playing. See if you could make number one. But meantime, that was the major thing, hearing the songs 15, 20 times a day.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's what a lot of people don't understand. You know, sometimes it's not the greatest thing in the world to right away have a number one hit because then the pressure's on to follow. And a lot of groups could never repeat that. And there were one hit wonders because they just couldn't come up with that second hit. And a lot of groups had different reasons why they didn't do that, but, you know, we won't even go into that.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's different for every group. And then have some groups that quietly had a whole bunch of hits, and when you think about it, you say, oh, I forgot about that one, I forgot about that one, I forgot about that one, you know, and it goes on and on. I'll give you a perfect example. As they say in the hood, not for nothing, but... the Del Satins were on umpteen hits, maybe 30 hits.
Right.
Shouldn't they get some recognitions? Even the Belmonts. I mean, you
know.
And you know how it is.
I know the deal.
You know, so there should be recognition for that kind of stuff. I mean, the Del Satins were probably on more hit records if you include all the Johnny hits, you know, with Freddie Ferrara and Les. You know, they were probably on more hits than almost anybody that were in the genre.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
You're 100% right.
You know, but, it's like, and I always say this, you know, Joe, like, my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in my heart and in my house and in my head.
That's my house. Yeah,
that's my house. And that's where it is. And they could say whatever they want. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Johnny Maestro is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, period.
That's the bottom line. You're right.
In my head.
That's right. Like I tell my kids, outside might be 214, whatever, 2014.
Right.
But in my house is 1955.
There you go.
They look at me like I got two heads.
But you're absolutely right.
Hi, this is Terry Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Let's move ahead.
Okay.
It's 1963, and we'll talk about a guy who's a really, really sweet guy, talented guy. I told you he came over my house and ate pasta with me when I had my search.
Well, Phil.
Phil Spina.
Okay.
How did you meet Phil?
Well, actually, my cousin Richie met Phil. You know, Phil, years ago, was a salesman for insurance, I believe it was.
Right.
He called me up and said I was wrong or something. I don't know. I'm almost positive it was that.
Uh-huh.
And he met my cousin Richie through that, and he knew Carmine and Louie.
Right.
And he wanted to start to see a new group with a new sound because he had some stuff that he wrote.
Right.
And we got together, and we started the group. And then we changed the name to The Riffs.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote Why the Night So Cold, and him and Dennis got together.
Right.
They started writing stuff. They were all in Mr. Dennis's brother. Ed, I think his brother
right.
was, yes. And, you know, they all were there at the time when we started recording in 1963 to 1964. And the records came out in 64, actually.
Well, you, I mean, and you were in good company. Who knew about Dennis? I mean, you know, Dennis, you know,
who knew?
11 Grammy nominations. I mean, you know, Dennis wrote everything in the world. You
know, I know, and I'm proud to be one of his first groups.
You bet.
You know, that he, you know, he published stuff for us. He got us on Old Town. I mean, we were on Sun Label. We had a couple of different labels that we were on, you know.
Right.
And it was a great thing, you know. It was really a great thing between them two guys. They really had their stuff together, you know.
Well, now, the Little Girl tune,
yes.
That was a Phil Spina tune also?
Yes, that was Phil Spina wrote that, yes.
Wow.
Little girl. Little girl.
Little girl.
Little girl.
Little girl.
Little girl.
Little girl.
Little girl.
Little girl.
You're so nice, little girl.
Little girl.
You're my sugar and spice, and I know.
And I know.
You're just meant for me. Little girl,
little girl,
you're so sweet, little girl,
little girl.
You're my one big dream, and I know,
and I know.
Oh, you're just meant for me. Little girl, I dream of only you, little girl. You make my dream come true, little girl. Now take me by the hand and lead us to our wonderland.
So cold.
Now, there were other groups that have covered that. Am I correct?
Not really.
No?
Not really. No. It was only one group that covered it, and they were in Germany,
oh.
Believe it or not.
Wow.
Okay? And they had made a mistake. They thought I wrote the song.
Huh?
You know what I mean? And they put it on their album with me as the writer and the singer. You know? And I had to write back to them and tell them that they were wrong. And if you would have heard it, they had broken English singing Little Girl. And when we did it, we went, little, little, little girl. You know, it was
right.
Like that, right?
Right.
They went, they sang the song like, little, little, little girl, you know?
Right.
And it was, but they had great harmony. But they were broken English.
Wow.
And I got the record home. I got it here.
Wow.
I can't believe it. And how I found out was through a fan of ours that saw us in Naples at one time, and he went to Germany. He said, Joe, look at this here. Who are these guys, the Riffs?
Uh-huh.
It's us. So he had our picture in there, and underneath was the German group.
Right.
And a little girl that they recorded our song. It was funny. It was great, you know.
Well, that reminds me of what all the record companies used to do in those days, because
oh,
a lot of them, and Relic did this a lot, you know, and some of the others, they would have the group come in and they would audition or do or whatever, and then they'd shoot pictures and whatever, and then you didn't get to record until 9-10 months later, sometimes a year later.
Easy.
And by that time, there were two different members in the group.
That's right.
You know,
it was true. It was true.
And then they would put out the bios and the pictures, and they would always be wrong.
That's it. That's what happened so many times. Because when Phil came into the group, in other words, he was the writer, and he was actually our manager, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted his cousin, Jimmy Nisi,
uh-huh.
to do the lead. Because Nisi had a very good lead, you know.
Right, right.
So me and my cousin were doing the leads at the time. And I said, I backed down. I said, no problem.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he came in the group. And he recorded these here songs.
Uh-huh.
Of course, later years, I did them over myself.
Gotcha.
But he was the original guy on the tapes.
Uh-huh.
And he had a great lead. This kid was, he was on, I said, I love this guy.
Wow.
You know, I said, with his voice, we're going to have a big freaking hit.
Wow.
You know? And, but he didn't stick it out. He had the voice, but he didn't have the time to put in.
I hear
you. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you.
And,
listen.
And he left the group.
Wow.
And, you know, then we just started with just four of us at the time, and then Carmine left the group. And then Louie left the group because they got married and they had families and they did what they had to do, you know.
Right, right.
And then I started another group. Me and my cousin went into another group, you know what I mean? And then my cousin left me because then his wife was complaining about, oh, you're still singing, about whatever the case.
I know how that works, yeah.
Yeah, and he left me, and then I started, I got another guy in the group. And I kept going, and until today. I
mean, well, that leads me to the next tune, and the tune says, "Where there's a will, there's a way." So you know,
that's right.
That's your life story, man. That's your life story. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Where there is a will, all people say there is a way. Where there is a will, there is a way. Still. The will can't find the way.
That's right. That's right, man. And that was a great tune, too. And out of all the songs, believe it or not, I love that one.
Uh-huh.
That one was really, to me,
yeah.
You know, it was like, it was a cup of tea, man. I guess
you only made one mistake with that song.
What was that?
It says Crystal Ball Records, so you gave it to Ed Engel.
Yeah, I didn't do it. Phil did that.
I'm teasing.
Yeah, Phil did that.
I'm teasing. I always gave him a hard time.
Yeah.
Ed Engel. You know.
That was a big mistake, you know, between me and you. I mean, whatever. Yeah. Even though Ed is a nice guy, I know Ed too.
Because Ed made all the money on it.
Yeah. I mean, I got all my stuff from here to Chicago to Italy to France, wherever they got doo-wops.
Right.
He's involved. And we're on their records, because I got plenty of them home on
these
CDs that he put out, you know.
Right. So,
it's crazy, but that's how life is, you know?
Well, of course, you know. Hey, listen, just hearing it back, you know, we did a ballad with Harmony Street, and the name of the tune is Harmony Street, you know.
Right.
And it's been on so many compilations. I mean, it's on collectibles, it's on here, it's on there. As Mickey B even put it on his Volume 2 things, because it's a very harmony, kind of a Harmony Street tune, you know. But, you know, it's nice to hear it back. And you know what's really funny? I'm trying to think of who produced the Mickey B. It was Early Bird. And Chris from Early Bird. He actually called me up and he said, you know what? Mickey really likes the tune. We want to rent it from you. And I think they sent me a check for $250 or $300. And I said to him, nobody does that. They just say, can we use the tune? And they put it out. I said, you guys are like, forget it. You know, you want to rent the tune? I said, of course, you can have it. He said, no, we want to send you something. I said, wow. That's, because, you know, in this business, everybody, you know. But, you know, it's still about the music. I have this theory now, Joey, and I say this all the time. It's like, shut up and sing. It's like, stop whining. Stop with your crap. Stop with this 40 years ago. Stop with this, you know, with, you looked at me the wrong way.
Right.
Just sing, okay? Ready?
You know, it's true, because a lot of guys like to sing.
Right.
I ran into so many guys down here in Florida.
Right.
They love to sing, but they don't like to rehearse too much, because they don't realize rehearsing makes you perfect.
Well, it does.
Okay? And without rehearsing, it don't fly. And I believe in rehearsing.
I agree.
And a lot of guys don't. They start hot, you know, 2, 3 months, 4 months, a year, say. And then all of a sudden, they start cooling down.
Yeah.
You know, what do we have to do it tonight again?
I hear you.
And I said, yeah, man, if you want to make money, yes, you got to do that.
I hear you.
I said, you want to sound good? Somebody's going to listen. They're going to say, oh, that's a good group. Why don't we hire them? But if you're going to sound, you know, like a Shangad, the group that's in the time, like, you know, half-assed, you know, it's no good.
I agree with you. Well, you know, that's what made Harmony Street so tight, was that we got to a point where we were breathing together, we were phrasing together. I had this talk with Tim Hauser. Believe it or not, Tim Hauser was a big Harmony Street fan, because we did a lot of Manhattan Transfer-ish type stuff, because I had three girls in the group.
He
loved the group. And we used to do Cat Is High and Jive a Jive and some of that stuff, you know. You know, he would say to me, you got to breathe together. Both agreed, and you're going to agree on this. Half the battle to being tight is not about singing. It's about listening.
Hi, everyone. This is Tim Hauser from the Manhattan Transfer. And you are listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. Keep listening, man.
That's right. That's called blending.
It's lit, you know. I'll give you a perfect example. Dee in the group, she was the blonde. She would always say, I can't hear myself in the monitor. And I would say, Dee, if you can hear yourself in the blend, You're too loud. Exactly right, Joe. I said, you need to hear the blend. If you're sticking out, then it means you're singing too loud. Duh.
Right.
And you know, that's like, you know, singing 101, you know, it's like I said, you could take five guys, and then there are the nights that you don't hear the monitor so well. So you know what you do? You go by how it feels. I said, you know how it feels. You've been singing this stuff for like 10 years together. go by how it feels,
right.
You know?
That's
but,
right.
You know, it's... So, the tune Storm, tell me about that tune.
Oh, yeah, Storm, I added, in fact, I mailed it to you. When you hear my version and Phil's version, it's two different versions.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's the same exact one, but I added the thunder in it.
Uh-huh.
When I did the song over, I added the thunder, like it's supposed to be thunder and raining and storming.
Right.
And stuff like that. They were supposed to do that in the session, and they never did it. And I said, you know why? I mean, you know, because it's all about storm and love and
right.
You hit like a storm and stuff like that. And they never did, so I did it, and I released it like that.
As we sat in the still of the night, everything had seemed all right. Suddenly a wind appeared, and with the wind you had disappeared. You hit like a storm. Misinformed and setting up the storm. Your words were like thunder. I stopped to wonder. A storm. I wanted to run, search for the sun. Tell me what could I do?
I like that one too. That was a good one too. I like that.
Well, you know, you're entitled to do that. So, and Phil wrote a lot of stuff. As a matter of fact, we even recorded a couple of Phil's tunes when I was with George and Joe, whatever. We did them in my studio. You know, Phil's really a talented guy.
Oh, definitely.
You know, he knows his stuff. And not only that, on top of all of that, he's such a sweetheart.
No, Phil's a good guy. I mean, he always was a good guy. You know, he had problems with his wife at the time.
I know.
A few years back.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him. You know, we all did, you know. And then when she finally passed away, you know, like, he got a little relief, I guess, because he was, like, taking care of her for a long time, you know. And he was tied up.
Yeah.
And he came out to my house and Carmine's house. He had 100 songs.
Oh, yeah.
I said, are you crazy? I said, I'm too old to start this now, man.
No, I know.
Hey, I mean, you know, it's like, he gave me a song, I forgot the name of it. Dancing Queen.
Right.
I think it was a Dancing Queen, you know?
Huh.
He had 2,000 words in it. I said, Phil, you wrote a book.
Right.
The song is good, but
right.
You wrote a book. I got to take some words out if I'm going to have to do it.
Right.
I got to find out with words. About, I said, well, I can't remember all that shit unless I take the thing on stage with me with paper, you know?
Hey, this is Phil Spina, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Think of it back this way, because I had a band in every decade. As a matter of fact, you know, I had a lot of top 40 groups. I had a group years ago. We used to say that play the same clubs as Rubber Band, which was Frank Mercuso's group.
Right.
And then there was the main event. That was Vito Balsamo's group when
right.
He wasn't working with, you know, with the Salutations group. And you know, it was like, when you did these clubs and you were like a top 40 group or something like that, you had to learn five tunes a week. Otherwise, it was like, forget it.
Oh yeah, no, see, they weren't too bad. You got to understand, but if you get one song with it's 5 minutes long,
right?
Okay, and it's got all different words, nothing rhymes. You know what I'm talking about?
I hear you.
It rhymes, but it got different words to it. And at my age, you know, if I was younger, I would have probably did it. I'll be honest. You know, because my memory right now isn't as sharp as it was many, many years ago.
I hear you.
I'm being honest with you.
I hear you.
You know?
Who am I again?
Excuse me?
Who am I again?
You're Mike.
Thank you.
I'm lucky I remember that.
Yeah, cool. I forgot.
Hey, I forget who I am too sometimes. Right. What are you going to do? You can't help it.
Right.
That's life.
Well, you know, and then, you know, as they say also, you know, CRS sets in.
Right.
And you know what that means?
Yes,
can't remember stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
it's true.
I was going to say can't remember shit, but you know.
I know.
When you say that, people don't like when you say that on the radio, so I say it anyway.
I'm trying not to curse now.
Well, you know what's funny? You want to hear something?
York, you know,
let me tell you something. I did a 3-hour interview with David Brigati. And you know, everything with David is F and this and F and that and F Joey D. And he says to me, "You live near Dion, don't you?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "F Dion, F him." He says, "Joey D, F him. He never paid me for that gig." He goes, paid me. Still owes me the money. F him." So I started bleeping him because I have a little thing where I can like go bleep, you know.
Then
I started just leaving him in there. And people that heard that interview, they said it was greatest interview because he was just
because
talking.
Told the truth, man.
Well, a lot of people don't know that David Brigati was really the brains behind the Rascals
and one of the most talented guys
in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
A lot of people don't know.
Yeah,
right?
I mean.
They really don't.
Yeah, you know. So then we have Telltale Friends, which is a great,
that was a great title.
Yeah.
The only mistake with that song, I felt, was it tried to imitate, like, the Four Seasons.
Right.
Why? Because the Four Seasons were very strong. They were competing with the Beatles, if you remember.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they were making it. They were making hits when the Beatles were out, which was very tough for us.
Right.
Or any group coming up in the late, in the middle 60s,
right,
like 64 and up, we had a tough time because they knocked us for a loop.
Yeah, but there were a few groups. Like, if you remember Be My Girl by the Four Evers, they snuck in there with a Four Seasons type of tune.
Yes, they did. By the way,
Telltale Friends is a great tune. There's a few things that, there were a few transitions, like, you know, when it goes, like, in certain directions with chord changes that I probably would have evened out. But the tune on its own is a great tune. There are some great vocals on that tune.
Oh, no, they were good, It was a good
sound. For sure.
It was good, yeah. It was a real good sound, and it was one of my favorites. I started going up to Don K. Reed,
uh-huh.
he started playing all the riff stuff.
Wow.
From the beginning to the end, from the creations to the riffs, and he kept playing it and kept playing it.
Right.
And I believe by me keep singing, I put a mark.
Right.
On the you know, the riffs. Like, I made them somebody.
Cool.
You know what I'm trying to say? That the reason why is because I kept singing, I didn't stop.
Well,
some ideas.
You put in years. It's your life's work. It's part of your history and your heritage and everything else. And, you know, it's like, you know, at our age right now, when you look back, every time we get to get onto a bandstand to hold a microphone, it's gravy because we all did really good things. And, you know, I always say it's that moment in the middle of a tune when you're looking out at the audience and you're taking that breath and you're singing it pretty good and they're enjoying it, whatever, that's what it's all about. It's not the before, it's not the after, it's not the bullshit that goes along with being in this business. It's about that moment, that freeze frame moment, you know?
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, you've done it since you were a kid, you know, and it also almost becomes like a spiritual thing. So now you look back, you say, I've done almost everything there is to do. So every time I get a chance to do it again, it's like, thank you, God.
That's you, right. You know? That's what it's all about.
You know.
And that's what made me, many years ago, when we were the Rips, and I saw, like, things happening with the guys, like, they were straying because they were married and they had family problems, I guess, going on.
Right.
And I saw that happening, you know.
Right.
Even with Phil, even with Carmine and Rich, everybody, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it's called Jimmy, real life.
Jimmy left the group, and I saw all this here crap going on. I said, you know something, Joe? I'm going to keep singing. I'm going to go and register the name. And I registered the name in 1964.
Right.
Which unbelievable.
Is, which
and
is,
I did it. Of course, my uncles, they said, register the name.
Right.
Somebody takes it and gets a hit, you can nail them. You know
right.
what I mean? And that's what I did.
Well, they were smart. And, you know, you remember in the old days you wanted to copyright a song, you'd put the tape in an envelope and mail it to yourself and not open it because you had the postmark on it with the date.
I want to tell you a story. It's a true story.
Go ahead.
Connie Stevens.
Right.
Okay. Her hit 16 different reasons.
Uh-huh.
I wrote 12 different reasons before her.
Huh.
We were in the same show in St. Michael's. I can't remember the year. It was in the 60s, the early 60s. And she was there performing. And she came out with this song. I didn't have the copyright. I had it on a piece of paper.
Wow.
And we never did a song live in front of people if we didn't copyright it.
Uh-huh.
So I said, yeah, let's do the song. We did it about four or five times. You know?
Right.
We did it, and then before you know it, 6 months later, she came out with 16 different reasons.
Wow.
And I got the paper right in my studio. The day I wrote that freaking thing, I did only 12. 12 different, and that was the name of the song was 12 Different Reasons. That was it. Not 12 different, 16 different reasons why I love you. It was 12 different reasons. And it started when, like, this space ago, 12 different reasons why I love you.
Uh-huh.
From one, the way you hold my hand.
Wow.
And we did this duo style.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Well, call her up. She'd probably laugh.
Yeah, that was a jerk.
She'd laugh.
You know, forget about it. It was crazy. When I came out, I was like, man. What did I do? I can't do nothing.
I got one for you, and I told Frank Mercuso this. You know the tune Guardian Angel?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Do you know where that tune originally came from?
No, I don't.
That tune, believe it or not, was originally done by Mike Palladino and his group, which became the Bonaires, believe it or not. And he played me the tune. I played it on my show. It's that tune. And it was done many years before that. Each night before I go to bed.
No, I know another group made it.
And
I knew that.
Yes.
I knew that, but I didn't know the name of the group.
Right. And Frank didn't even know that. I mean, you know, I said, Frank, who originally done it? He says, I don't know.
Yeah.
He's
very honest. Yeah.
It was cool. You know, it was something else, you know. Don't Say Goodnight.
Right.
That was 66.
That was in 66. I think the videos made it into 50-something, whatever it was. I don't remember.
Right.
Or was The Other Side of something. I think it was The Other Side. No, Moonglow was on The Other Side of
right.
the other one. But, yeah, I recorded that, and I did that on a different label.
Right, with different guys.
Yes.
Right.
These were the different riffs.
Gotcha.
Don't say good night. Please don't close the door. Just take my hand for a minute or more.
Just one minute more.
Don't say good night.
So in 1979, you regrouped the riffs, and right. The lineup was what at that point?
Was Rocky, Joe Figurata, Angel Anglero, and Mel Goldman.
Ah,
right.
Yeah.
And we were busy. We were busy as hell. I mean, like, forget about it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, that's how I got into with Lenny, because we were so busy, we did the same show together.
Gotcha.
You know? And right after that show, then he gave me a call. He said, Joe, I want you in my group, papa, I know you're 100 years, and this, that, and the other thing, and that's what happened, you know?
And you said, yeah, but I would have to surgically remove the other guys from me, so I guess Rocky went with you.
Rocky and Joe Figurata went with me.
Right, gotcha.
Because I took the best out of the everybody. Well, we didn't need a bass. Angel was the bass at the time.
Right.
And we didn't need a Mel because we had our tenors. I was a tenor. Everybody was a tenor in a group.
You know? So yeah. I know like, groups like that. Yeah, sure.
So it was like a big thing. So when we got with Lenny saw the action happening.
Right.
And we built it up. And that was it. That was the story, you know. We got so busy. It was unbelievable. I mean, like, crazy.
No, it's a great story, and you know, that was a good time then, because you know the sound was coming back, and I remember Brucey used to do the stuff. You know, first of all, there was the San Gennaro Festival. Everybody used to do that.
Yeah, we did that.
And then you probably did St. James Infirmary out in Deer Park.
Yeah.
I know that because I had the house band there for a while, believe it or not. You know, because they kept the bands like every 4 or 5 weeks. Barry used to keep the bands and then let them go, you know. But that was great times. And so tell me about New York City Lady.
Yes. Well, we were with Lenny Copeland and Chimes.
Right.
And we were the original Lenny Copeland and Chimes.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that we had to see a guy, Joe. This little guy, Joe, came over. I knew Joe for years. He was a writer. And he had to see a song. And I looked at it. I said, you know, Lenny, this sounds like a good song. Why don't we try it? First, I tried it with the riffs, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, this was before it went to Lenny. And I gave it to Lenny, actually.
Uh-huh.
That's what really happened. I'm thinking now. That's what happened. And Lenny tried it. He liked it. We directed it. We added all this music to it. We went into Jay Siegel's studio in Manhattan in Broadway.
Right.
And we recorded it there.
Cool.
And he did a great job, and the other side was Why Is Love So Bad.
Right.
And that was Lenny's song that he wrote.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, we pushed it out on Freedom Label. You know, that came out on a 45 at that time, you know. And that was it. And the thing started making noise. We were on television with other people. A lot of television shows went on with it.
Right.
You know, it was really a nice thing happening. You know, Cousin Brucey took us on a Coney Island trip on, I think it was 48 hours.
Right.
You know, and we went on air and we did the whole song there. And you saw us in the studio recording it.
Right.
It was really a nice cut. We had a 25-minute shot on television from Cousin Brucey.
Right.
And it was a shot in the arm for us. And right after that, we got so busy, forget about it.
And great memories. I mean,
oh,
you know.
Yeah. Cousin Brucey loved us so right. much, he hired us for everything.
Cool.
It was ridiculous. I mean, we were so busy. We were working 3 times a week.
Wow.
For 10, almost 11 years.
Wow.
So fine with that golden tan and the shapely lines. Never met a woman as alive and free as my New York City lady. With her velvet jeans and a Broadway smile, she looks a lot like a Park Avenue gal. Great big penthouse up to the stars. Might as well go for me to Mars. She's my
New York City lady.
Well, I'm talking about my
New York City lady.
Yes, I'm
And not only that, there's a lot of YouTube stuff of Chimes live in clubs and here and there and being
right.
introduced by Brucey and all of that. There's a lot of that stuff on YouTube.
Right, right.
You know,
a lot of people saw us and they put it on there, or if it was you know, it was never the original group.
Right.
Because they broke up early in life, you know. They
right.
broke up in 73, 74.
Right.
I mean, sorry, 64, around that area.
Right, right.
And then they tried to get back into the 70s, but they couldn't make it. And that was it. And then Lenny had, we did a show with them in Shea Stadium.
Ah.
Okay? I was the Riffs. They were the Chimes.
Wow.
And I got a call the next day after the show, and that's how I got into the Lenny Copeland and the Chimes.
Wow.
So, and he called me up. I said, no problem. You got the hit, brother. I said, I remember you from 58, and I used to go to your rehearsals in 59. And in 59, I made him hear my records. He says, you got good sound, man. He says, they should be hits.
Huh.
His eyes to God's eyes. He,
wow.
You know, it was like, you know. But me and him got along very well, and... you know, we did a lot of things together, me and Lenny.
Cool.
Really, I miss him. I really do. That's
well,
the truth.
Oh, of course you do. As a matter of fact, you know, I did a really good interview with Lenny. I don't know if you heard that interview. If you didn't, I have to send it to you.
Yeah, send it to me.
Yeah, it's a good, it's about maybe two and a half hours. And, you know, he pretty much tells the whole story, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and it was really good. And he sent me, it was funny. He said, I'm sending you a whole bunch of CDs, he goes, but I'm also, you know, he's got the one CD set that's like a double CD.
Yeah.
He says, I'm sending you two of those. He says, one's for you and one's for your wife. he goes, but that he was, you know, that was him. He was a nice guy that way, you know?
Oh, no, he was very generous. I mean, as far as functions for sick people or any kind of cancer, blindness, or whatever the case may be, sick kids, we did it.
Right.
We did it. We don't waste no time. We were on over 28 television shows.
Right.
You know, for sickness.
Well, did you probably did the Jerry Lewis telephone as well.
Oh, yeah. They flew us to Vegas.
Yeah.
And we did it with Vegas with Jerry Lewis.
Right.
And that was a beautiful thing. And that helped us along, too.
Right.
You know.
Oh, sure.
And we were busy. I mean, I can't say it any more than, you know, I said it one time on my, you know, my Facebook that we were so busy and, I couldn't believe how busy we got after the Riffs became the Chimes.
Yeah.
And in the book, if you look in your rock and roll books, on the top of the page, when you look up Chimes,
right,
it says Riffs become Chimes.
Wow.
And I got every book. I got 10 books in there with me, and you know, I made sure I bought them because I was in them. You know?
Yeah, but well, you know, you got, well, the Forgotten 30 Rock and Roll is a big one, and then you have the one that Brucey did that one. There's one that,
The Cadillac on the front.
Yeah, right. And
yeah,
then,
I'm in that one too.
And then there's, if you go on the net, you got the white doo-wop collectors. You ever go to that site?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great site. That's he leaves no stone unturned. As a matter of fact, I sent him stuff, believe it or not, when the Islanders, you know, after Relic, we signed with a guy by the name of Gino Moretti. He had GMC Records. We had a tune called Where the Lights Are Bright, and it was written by Ray Cerrone of the Bell Notes.
Oh.
And who I found, believe it or not, in Arizona just about a couple of months ago, which is like, whoa, you know. And the record was climbing, Pick with a Bullet, and then it just fizzled out, you know. So that was that. And I said to Connie Francis, I said, you know, Connie, years ago, there was a guy that we signed with, and he kept swearing to me, I was the one that found Connie Francis. I was the one that signed her to MGM. I'm the one that worked with her. I'm the one, I said, and he told me this for years, and I don't know where he is. I lost touch with him. I says, I got to ask you this. Did you ever hear of a guy named Gino Moretti? And she, long pause, and she said to me, Gino Moretti, I can see him like he's standing right in front of me. He was one of the sweetest, nicest guys. And everything he said to you was true. She said, I wish I could hug him right now. She says, I could picture his face. And I went, thank you for clearing that up because I always thought he was full of it.
Yeah, right? I know. She was a wonderful person. I know her too.
And funny.
she's a nice person.
And funny. You know, I mean, really, really funny. She says, I said to her, so, is there anything you don't want to talk about? She says, don't ask me how I got started. I hate that. She says, if people ask me how I got started, I hang up on them. She said, so I said, you know, so I laughed. I says, out of all the things that Connie Francis wouldn't want to talk about, the rape, the mental institutions, this, that, and the other. She says, no, I'll describe the rape to you. She says, if you want to talk about it for 3 hours. She said, but don't ask me how I got started. She says, it's bullshit. Go Google it.
Right, right.
And I laughed.
Yeah.
It's funny, man. So yeah. Anyway, it's 1995 in September, and you're on stage, and you had a heart attack?
Yes, I had a heart attack in a rock and roll show.
Wow.
And it was I believe it was a Richard Natus show outside. It was held out in Long Island.
Wow.
This woman, Margaret, who used to run Don K. Reed's show.
Yeah, I remember Margaret. Of course I do.
And she was there.
Right.
And Don K. Reed was the host, I think, that night.
Right.
And that day, it was in the daytime.
Wow.
And I was on stage singing, and I was my turn to do a lead. And I got up there, start singing, and before you know it, I told Lenny next to me, I said, Lenny, I think I'm having a heart attack. He goes, what? I says, yeah. And I went down on one knee, because then it started bothering me. And Margaret, God bless that woman, I love her. She grabbed me like I was a pretzel.
Wow.
All right, and she dragged me off stage, and it was an ambulance right next to the stage.
Wow.
At the time, that was the law. Any outside concerts has to be ambulance around the,
right.
You know, the section, right?
Right.
And they threw me in the ambulance, and they took me to St. Francis.
Unbelievable.
And they did what they had to do, and I was out in 2 weeks, you know?
Wow.
And right there, from there, we went on the road with the Chimes, and went to Philly, I believe it was Philadelphia. We drove there. It was a little rough for me because I just got out of the hospital.
Right.
And we were on tour. First we did Jersey, then we did Philly. You know, we were on a little tour. But it knocked the hell out of me. You know what I mean?
And you said, Lenny, we can go to Philly, but no pretzels, no cheesesteaks, no hot dogs.
Yeah. Rocky was worried about me.
Wow.
And I got it on film, you know. I lost maybe 15, 20 pounds.
Wow.
Man, like in a short period of time. You know, and he says, are you all right to do it? I said, yeah, I'll be all right. That's
wow.
How much I love this thing. You know what I mean? It was like,
I was
a little scared in the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm being honest with you.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And after the tour, I was a little wiped out.
Well,
you know,
because you've been doing this all your life, you sang with pneumonia, you sang with broken arms, broken legs,
right.
Broken if, you know, unless you were like, dying,
you
called up and said, I can't make it. And you sang with sore throats and you sang with good nights, bad nights. But, you know,
right.
It was just, you know, the only thing I can draw an analogy to was we did a show. Now, you know, David Foreman, Little Isidore, right?
Right, right.
Okay. This was right in Chappaqua on the Green, right around the corner from Bill and Hillary's house. It was a way back. And it was Harmony Street and the Inquisitors, and that's when, of course, Frenchie and Johnny Gale and those guys were with the Inquisitors.
Right.
And so Isidore gets off the stage, and he was wearing, his trademark was to wear a sports jacket with no shirt underneath. So it was just his sports jacket,
right.
You know, with the ponytail. And he gets off, and he lights up a cigarette, and we're talking right in front of the bandstand, and all of a sudden his eyes roll back in his head, and I actually caught him under his arms. And he had a heart attack that night. They lost his vitals in the ambulance. And he and I still talk about that night. And he says to me, I remember that night. I remember looking in your face. And then I remember like it was 2 weeks later. He said, you know, but, you know, that has got to be like really scary, especially being on stage because you want to finish the song.
Yeah. Oh boy.
And was it a cordless mic? No.
I think it was cordless. I don't remember.
That would have been something. That would have been something if you were finishing the song as they were putting you in the ambulance. You know?
Yeah. I know. But I was so in shock, you know, because I saw this woman pick me up like I was a tinker toy.
Wow.
And throw me in the ambulance, and she really saved my life. I mean, I thank her. You know, I always thank her when I speak to her. She says, stop doing it out of ass. Look, I'm here.
You know what? I I talk to Don pretty regularly. I'm going to remind him of that story. I'm going to tell him that. I'm going to say Joe Lasistero told me a story about Margaret whisking him into the ambulance. You know, whatever. He'll probably remember.
I hope so.
Because he remembers everything.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's funny, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's funny and not funny. So
no, I know.
So you had the heart attack, but you went back on the road, of course. And
right.
When did you come to Florida?
What I did was after I went on the road, and I went on the road a couple more times, and I wasn't really feeling that great. I'm going to be honest with you. You know,
right.
I wasn't feeling that great, and my wife was getting nervous, and she said, "Joe, I don't want to see you die. You always said, you know, you want to sing dying."
Right.
You almost did.
Right.
You know, and then when I was in the ambulance, I said, you know, I changed my mind.
Right.
You know, but anyway, what I did is we went on the road a couple more times, like I said. And after that, I had to sit down with Lenny and the boys and everything. And I told them, I said, look, I got to go. I said, I don't think I could take the pressure no more singing that much. I said, I'll be very honest with you. I don't feel that great. I'm going to go to Florida and
right.
chill out and see how I feel. And that's the story. That's when I left the group and I came to Florida.
Right.
And that's it. And then I was here for about 3 months. I felt good. I ran into Carmine. He took me to this Harmony organization that they had out
right,
here.
Right, the South Florida Do-Up organization,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Right,
yes,
right.
I don't remember the name. And I met a few guys. So everybody's singing. I felt good. I said, you know, I said to myself, I said, I think I'm going to start another group. I'll put the riffs back together.
Right.
And that's what I did.
Cool.
And I'm still singing since, you know.
Right. Well, you know, of course. And then, of course, in that group, actually, if I remember correctly, when I first started singing with George, I think we did a show together at Olympia Heights.
Yes. Yes.
At one point. We had just kind of put the group together. That was, well, Joe was in the group then. So we were together only
right.
about 2-3 months, maybe.
Right.
At that
right.
point. I remember that. And so with the riff starting over in the 80s, and of course Johnny T was in that group.
Right.
Right.
In the 90s, yeah.
Okay, so that was in the
90s. Right. Johnny T was in the group in the 90s, 96 and up.
Gotcha. Which was still,
yeah.
believe it or not, when you think back, it was still a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
And then you think and you go all the different plateaus and the different versions of the group and the different decades.
Oh, I had so many guys down here that they were like, go with Joe. You hit try you out. If you don't like it, hit throw you out.
Yeah,
know?
Right.
It
right,
was
right.
crazy. It was nuts. You know, I had guys at interviews
oh, please.
With guys. Tell me they're singing for 30 years, 35. They come in the group.
When,
they couldn't even
when I started Harmony Street,
yeah.
I had a conga. Well, I'll tell you what happened. You know, my brother was sick for a long time with AIDS. You know, he was one of those people. He was on AZT, and he was sick for quite a long time.
Right.
And so he hung in there for a real long time, but he was very, very sick. And when he first got sick, I wanted to start singing again. I was living in Danbury, Connecticut. So I put an ad in the paper, and I had guys, just like you said, marching through the thing. I sang with this, I sang with that, and I'm going, no, tearing
yeah,
my
yeah.
Don't.
Yeah.
I'll call you, don't call me. And finally,
right.
I get a call from a girl, Dee Heverin. She says, you know, we want to answer the ad, but we're three girls that sing together with a trio called Class, and we want to come over. So they did Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. They did... you know, Mr. Sandman, they did all this like really cutesy harmony stuff. I said, listen to me. If you listen to every word I say, we'll be great. And I said, here I am, three girls, perfect pitch, died and went to heaven, whatever.
Right,
and it worked. And, you know, we had a lot of fun, but I never figured three girls, never in a million years. It's hard enough to have one girl. Dee used to come on stage. She used to say, we have three times of the month in this group.
There's
a three. We have three times in a month, and
right.
we take it all out on him. She goes, you know, and it was, you know, and it was great. You know, I wish I had him down here in Florida. You know, it would
well,
be something very different.
In,
you know,
in New York and the Bronx and all the places,
yeah.
they had great singers. And out here, I found that, you know, some guys could sing out. I ain't going to say everybody
right.
can't sing. I'm not saying
right.
that. but they had different ideas of making money.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I tell you, you don't rehearse, you don't make money.
I hear you.
You know what I mean? And they don't want to sing, but they didn't want to rehearse, so I got rid of them. I mean, you can't go up there and sound shitty. I mean, I did that a few times with guys that didn't rehearse, and there was a couple of mistakes on stage, and I didn't appreciate it. I didn't say nothing on stage, but after the show, I opened my mouth, you know?
I hear you.
I mean, that's what rehearsal's about.
You're right.
And I told them, I said, the reason why you made a mistake is because we didn't rehearse for this here particular show.
Well, it's not only that. You can come to rehearsal, but you got to listen to it during the week, too. And knowing you, you touch the tune every night, and then because you couldn't go to sleep until you said, okay, now I know this tune. And basically, I know you could rehearse a tune 20 times. It doesn't get tight until you do it in front of an audience because that's when it gels.
That's right.
You know.
That's what it's all about.
And you know, it's like, but still, you'll be doing this until somebody tells you you can't do it anymore. Because that's who you are.
Yep.
You know?
No, it's the truth. That's how I feel, because I really enjoy doing it. And like you said, if I rehearse with the guys, I rehearse myself to death because now when they come to the next rehearsal, I know all my parts.
Right.
I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
Harmony Street rehearsed twice a week.
Right.
For all those years, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then we worked a lot. We were really what was happening in New England for many, many years. And for a group that never had a hit, we opened up an awful lot. Do you know that Harmony Street was the first group ever to walk onto a stage for Albanese? It was many years ago, Queens College.
Wow.
And we did that. We opened up the 200th anniversary UGHA show.
Which was great.
We did the White House Christmas party for Bill and Hillary, and that was really a feather. You know, it was the only doo-wop ever really to be a major show at the White House, which was very cool.
That's something to cherish.
Absolutely. And you know, I say to myself, we were lucky. It was being in the right place. As a matter of fact, we turned down more stuff because it was later on. And, you know, we were all adults and had jobs, and we couldn't do all the things that came our way. We did the anthem at Shea, at Yankee, which I called up Johnny Maestro when we got, this is what happened at Shea. We were supposed to do Mother's Day, and we had a really kick-ass version of the national anthem. So we were supposed to get a 25-minute show in the anthem. So just before, a week before, I get a phone call from Vito Vitiello from the Mets, and he says to me, sorry, he says, you can do the 25-minute show, but you can't do the anthem because so-and-so was in town, and the Met owners want her to do it, and I don't even remember who it was. And the girls said to me, tell him we're not coming. And when the three girls linked arms and said, we ain't doing it. I mean, that was it. That was the thing about having three girls. And I called them back and I said, you're not going to believe this. But they said, unless they get the anthem, they're not coming. And it breaks my heart. It says, I'll make it up to you. So here we go that year. They were in the playoffs. He calls me back. We did a 25-minute show and the anthem at Shea the night after Boys to Men did the anthem. And that was, I'm saying to myself, you know, that was the one time that saying no paid off. And I called the Johnny, and I said to him, what is the secret of singing at Shea? And he says to me, they'll give you a real-time monitor, because we're doing a 25-minute show, a cappella. He says, if you listen to the real-time monitor, the minute you listen to the backfield speakers, you're dead. He says, you got to zero in on that monitor and just keep your focus there, because once you listen to the second and a half delay, you're gone. And he was right, we did it, and it was great, you know.
We did one out here, and we were told the same thing. Because when you listen to all the real speakers going into the audience, your voice comes back late.
Yeah.
You know? And it could screw you up so much.
You bet.
It was crazy. It was weird, but we did it. You know, it was nice.
Now, you guys covered I Count the Tears. I do that when I do my show with Kenny Brady, you know, which you don't hear that tune too often, you know, but I have a really good track to that tune. But that's a great tune to do. The CD was called Back to Back.
Yes, that was the Riff CD. It was Back to Back, yeah.
Right, very cool. You
know, yeah, because then we made that CD, and then we came out with Eddie Robbins, was one of the guys who were with the Mellow Kings at the time.
Right. How's Eddie doing? What's going on with Eddie?
Eddie's doing okay, as far as I know. Good. I mean, he's looking to sing again. And, he's, you know, he's home. He's not doing anything right now, you know. That's what's going on with him.
Yeah.
But when I met Eddie, he was fantastic. I got to say, he was really a great singer. You know, he got older, he kept smoking, you know, and stuff like that, which he's still good, you know, but a little rough around the edges. But that's what happens with age.
You
can't help that. But otherwise, he's a great guy, you know. And we started the Mellow Kings again over here, and then he had problems with one of the original guys. They called him up, and he was singing with this guy, and this guy didn't like him. I didn't know that, you know, and we were doing jobs and everything else, and then when I told him, I said, I can't take this punishment no more.
Right.
You know, this guy, every time we did a show, his name would come up. Oh, this guy, well, who's this here guy? He's stopping the show. You know, it was crazy, you know.
Mm.
So then we gave it up, and I went back to the Riffs, you know.
Yeah. And then I guess it's around 2010, and the legends were just kind of winding down for about 115 different reasons that we don't have to go into, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then comes the doo-wop mob, which was a great idea, you know.
Right.
Nobody called me, but that's all right. I got over it. But yeah, and so, you know, great lineup, Frankie and Carmine and Walter, you know. And there it goes, you know, and Steve, of course, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah, me and Steve came up with the name, and what happened was we were going to call ourselves the Brooklyn Boys.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was the first name.
Right.
And we decided with the mob thing, because we knew a lot of different people through the years, you know, and stuff like that.
Right.
We knew how they act.
Okay.
We saw the movies.
Right.
You know? So the whole plan was putting on a big show, acting like the mob, going into the audience and, you know, break their shoes a little bit and go up there and say like, hey Joe, are you going to do the next hit? And I'll go, yes, And, I'll do Little Star, say.
Right.
You know what I mean? That would be the hit.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but it never really turned out because after Steve had passed, you know, the group got like a little weak, of course, because we don't have no bass.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it was a little tough, you know, and we're still singing until today.
No, I understand.
But it's still rough, you know.
Of course.
I miss it because he was like part of the show. I mean, he had a mind on him.
Well, Steve was Steve, you know, Steve.
Yeah.
The thing about Steve was that what you were thinking, Steve was already saying.
That's right.
And you were thinking it, but he was already saying it. And
you better believe it.
And if you didn't like it, too bad.
That's right. When me and him were on stage, I got pictures here with me and him looking at him right now. And we were crazy on stage when we were together.
Right.
Because we were not, you know, we had it all planned, what we were doing.
Right.
The other three guys were standing there wondering what was going on.
Right.
You know, it was like craziness. But it worked. In the beginning, it really worked. And the harmony was pretty good, you know, when we really got down to it, you know.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like, after he had passed, again, the group got, like, a little separated a little bit.
It's very hard to keep something like that together. That's why, you know, two things. The first thing was, when I moved to Florida, I got all the advice from everybody. They said, oh, Florida is different than New York, man. It's different. In New York, everybody is innocent until proven guilty. In Florida, everybody's full of shit until they prove it. They're not. And I moved down and I said, I realized that. And I realized it in two different ways. I mean, I started out, I lived in Boca all those years, you know, and I said to myself, in Boca, It's a place where people come, they crash and burn in Philly and the Bronx and Long Island and New York, and they come down to reinvent. So when they reinvent, they could be anybody they want to be for the first couple of months until people figure them out. But at the beginning, they could be who they want to be in their fantasy, you know. So they drink the water and they become entitled in Boca and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But after a while, you know, when the layers get peeled away like an onion, people see them, they're like, okay, now I know who you are.
That's the truth. And of course,
Southern Florida is the sixth borough anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's what I was told.
Right.
You know?
And so it's all good, you know.
Yeah. No, it is. No, I mean, I enjoy it down here. I still miss home a little bit, but not as much as I did.
Yeah, but you don't miss the snow.
No, I don't.
You know,
they could keep that stuff.
You know, like they, you know, what's the difference between a snowman and a snowwoman?
What's that?
Snowballs.
That's right.
It's the obvious answer. I mean, I can't stand the cold in it. To me, you know, I remember in Danbury, you know, like going outside in the morning, it's like 3 below. And I say to myself, when it's 40 here, I'm freezing because I'm used to Florida, you know.
Of course. You get used to the heat, you know.
So, you know, I mean, that's it. And
I tell you, I still go out there, believe it or not. Yeah. If it's 40, I go out there with my short sleeve shirt.
Oh, me too.
I wash my car.
Me too.
You know, I keep myself busy and stuff like that, and I see people with overcoats, mink coats, all this stuff. I get crazy. I go, are they nuts? You know, they don't know what it is. That they probably do. They're probably all from New York, probably, or some other place, another state, you know, whatever, you know. But it was fun seeing how these people act out here. I mean, pretty much, you know. I mean, singing for 50-some-odd years is a, you know, it's a long trip, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And singing with so many different people, you, believe me, you still learn things at my age.
Oh, sure.
Whoever tells you different, they ain't in the business.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? I know everything. That's a lot of crap.
No.
You know, but, you know, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. My family loves what I do. And as long as I'm happy with my family and they're happy and I'm still singing, I'm a happy camper.
Right. I do understand that. Here's something I'm going to throw at you. What would you say to people who knew Joe LoCicero way back when you were singing with the Creations, way back when you were singing with the Riffs, and followed you all through your years with the Chimes, and now are friends of yours who come to your shows after all of these years to see Joe LoCicero get on stage and still sing a good song? What would you say to those people?
I would say to my fans, number one, and whoever liked me at the time, I never forget them. As long as I live, that's number one. And they could tell on my Facebook because how I write to them right back. You know what I mean? And not only that, whoever's starting out to sing, okay, is do not stop. If you love it, you keep going, because if you love it that much, somebody will pick you up. You know what I'm talking about? And you sing every place you could. That's the bottom line, you know, and never give it up, because it's something that God gave you a voice to share with other people.
Right.
And I think you should use it, and everybody would love you, you know,
right.
And that's it.
Yeah, and those are great words. So, Joe, it's been great spending time with you and talking to you. People have learned a lot more about Joe LoCicero and, you know, his career, his life, his loves, and what you're doing right now. It's been a gas, man, spending time with you. I've really enjoyed this time.
Oh, me too, Mike. And it's a pleasure enjoying time with you. I mean, on the radio. And I hope your show takes off like a bullet.
Cool.
Because I think it's really great, you know, and I heard it with you, and you're a great person. You really are. You know how to talk. You're a good speaker, and I enjoy that.
Well,
you know enough about the business, and that's why I'm on this phone with you.
Well, it's mutual respect, Joe, because you've paved a pretty solid highway in your career, and you're still doing it, and I think it's great. I want you to have a great week, and I will talk to you soon, and it's all good. Love you, man.
Okay, Mike. I appreciate it. I'll be listening.
Thanks, man.
All right, babe.
Ciao.
Hi, this is Jay Black, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Baby, we can't be apart. When I hear this beating in my heart, it tells me of you and the funny little things we used to do. Baby, how can I go on when your love for me is gone? It tells me of you and the funny little things we used to do. Gone are the days when I long for your kiss. You went away, leaving me all like this. Baby, how can I go when your love for me is gone? It tells me of you and the funny little things we used to do. Gone are the days when I long for your kiss. Funny little things we used to do. Baby.
Hi, this is Earl Speedo Carroll of the Cadillacs, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Well, you know, Brother Mike, how's everything going?
I'm doing great.
Now and then I cry in my sleep. Now and then the hurt is so deep.
Ah,
why do I I'm with someone new? That would be the smart thing to do. I guess I'm not that smart. Now and then I'll dream as I do. Now and then my dreams may come true.
Ah, ah,
time will pass, yes it is true, but I'll keep on thinking of you. 'Cause darling, I love you now as I love you then.
someone new, that would be the smart thing to do. I guess I'm not that smart now and then. I'll dream as I do now and then. My dreams may come true. I'll keep on thinking of you, 'cause darling, I love you now as I love you then.
Little Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
I want Juanita.
Juanita.
Juanita. I love you.
Love you.
Love you.
Love you.
Love you.
Late at night, na 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 na, late at night.
this is Jimmy Rogers, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
For your love, oh, I would do anything, oh, I would do anything for your love, for your
listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Try to give one little thought to me, though someone else may be nearer your heart. Once in a while, would you dream of the moments I shared with you, moments before we two drifted apart. In love smoldering ember, one spark may remain. If love still can't remember, tempted with yesterday's memories, knowing you think of me once in a
so, 16 candles make a lovely light, but not as bright as your eyes tonight. Blow out the candles, come true, for I'll be wishing that you love me too,
that you love me too.
You're only 16, but you're my teenage queen. Will glow forever and ever, for I love you so.
Oh, I love you so.
You're only 16, but you're my teenage queen. Heart will glow forever and ever.
you so, for I love you so.
Hi, this is Ben E. King, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Do you think that I am blue just because you said we're through? I told you so often I get along without you. Don't you wait for me to cry just because you said goodbye. I told you so often I get along without you. You hurt me for the last time. I don't need you no more. Now you'll be crying for me. Baby, don't you wait for me.
Wait for me.
I won't be back home, can't you see?
Can't you see?
I told you so often I get along without you. For the last time, I don't need you no more. I'm on my way. I got to be free. Now you be crying for me.
And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
As we sat in the still of the night, everything had seemed all right. Suddenly a wind appeared, and with the wind you had disappeared. You hit like a storm. Hit like a storm.
Hi, this is Chuck Negron, formerly of Three Dog Night, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
The Doo-Wop Shop 101. WCBS and New York.
Bram a lam a lam a lam a lam a ding dong. Bram a lam a lam a lam a lam a ding. Bon, 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 bon.
God says to up and you love him so. All these good goodies will never let them go. One thing is certain on CBS FM.
Wow.
Ring out, remember then. He's our favorite DJ. Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam machine gun. His name is Don K. Reed. Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam machine gun.
Boom, boom, boom,
round. Listen to those oldies, the WCBS FM. All along the doo-wop chop. Ram-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam-a-lam gum. We're always listening every Sunday night.
Boom, boom, boom.
CBS FM, those are my guests, and I like the lyrics to that song there. That's a little jingle you guys made.
Remalema Don K. Reed.
Okay. I've never been called.
Isn't
that
how it goes?
In the chapel of every dream will come true. In the chapel of dreams, there's a dream there for you. Through the dark of the night, though it's stranger to see, every heart finds delight in the chapel of dreams. Cause on till I find this chapel of renown, I'll search and search for the peace of mind. I'm glad my empty days have passed. Now I worship every shrine. It is heaven to know. Chapel of Dreams, Chapel of Dreams.
open up your heart. Recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found.
Ooh. On Harmony Street, ooh, there was a place that we used to go when we were feeling down and we were low. We looked into each other's eyes and found the road that led us to
Harmony Street.
It's a big surprise to find we really cared. We looked into each other's heart and found the road was free and clear to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all. Times when we both had our doubts, but through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found.
Ooh. On Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be.